is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us on this Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM alongside Michael Lombardi out at his office in Jersey. Stormy Bonantoni live at Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. We've got training camps opening up, so plenty of NFL talk this hour. The final round of the Open Championship at Royal Liverpool, by the way, looking at the live numbers, minus 550 live at DK right now for Brian Harman as he has back-to-back birdies on holes 6 and 7 to get back to 12 under. But most importantly, Michael, and I can't believe I haven't mentioned this on the show yet, Slam Ball is back, baby. So good. There's so much going on right now. It's off-season who?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I got to give Harman some credit here, Stormy. As much as you're trying to jinx him out of this winning this tournament. Okay, as soon as you keep bringing that up. I mean, yesterday he did the same thing. He was two over, and he fought himself back into contention. And so, you know, now he's just birdied the second hole, made a great putt again, and now he's back to even par, and he's got that five-shot lead that you keep saying has never been defeated. So we'll see.
Yes, he is the 10th golfer historically to enter the final round of the British with a five-stroke or better lead. The previous nine all won the thing. So let's see if Brian Harman can pull it out. I'm just saying. Okay, so.
Just saying. I know you are. You know, you're too nice to be malicious. I understand that. You're not trying to be mean.
I'm rooting for him.
You're just doing your job.
Exactly. I know. Exactly. I'm just trying to give the people at home the facts, trying to help out the best that I can. Now, Michael, this time of the show every day, we have been doing a new segment over the last few weeks called What's on Michael's Mind. This time of year, there's so much going on, whether it be NFL, off-season stuff with college football. There's a ton of news and notes and things that are swirling in your head. So today, what's the action? What's been on your mind?
Well, I think to me, one of my core beliefs in life and certainly in football that I've grown up with going back to my days, starting with Coach Walsh at San Francisco, is the line that you're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. And what has occurred down at Tallahassee at Florida A&M to me demonstrates that Willie Simmons, the head football coach of the Florida A&M Rattlers, isn't coaching it and he's not allowing it to happen. So they had a video that a rapper came into their locker room using foul language, not representing the Florida A&M school in the right tradition, barring on the licensing of using the helmet and the uniform. And the players allowed him to come do this. And Willie Simmons shut down the program, said he's suspending all operations on the program. You're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. And I think it was really an important message to send because I think he is the protector of the program. He has to protect everything that goes on. You know, what we saw happen at Northwestern, where this hazing has manifested itself going back through the years, you know, Pat Fitzgerald has to accept responsibility for if this has happened and this is what's going on, then he was either coaching it or allowing it to happen. And you can't allow it to happen. And so I applaud Willie Simmons for taking a stand, for basically making sure that his program has a standard of excellence that is bigger than, oh, it's okay, it's no big deal. You know, everybody uses foul language in a rap video. Everybody does this. It's no big deal. No, it is. Because you put that uniform on, you represent the school. You represent the brand. And if you let somebody outside your program destroy the band, it's on you.
Yep, Willie Simmons, again, suspending all football activities and banning players from the team facilities out there at Florida A&M. So the facility, weight room, access to the stadium field, all off limits. The only exceptions right now for medical treatment of doctors and athletic trainers at this point. But I wanted to follow up on what you said there about Pat Fitzgerald, because I did think that this was very interesting, that something like this happens, immediately he's taking action and suspends player activities. Is it odd to you that with the situation at Northwestern, we haven't seen any type of a step back? Is that just the sign of it being a Power 5 program and being in the Big Ten? Like, if this was happening elsewhere, do you think that there would have been potentially even taking the season off with everything that's gone down at Northwestern?
Well, I think to me, what I'm having a real hard time wrapping my head around is the fact that if Fitzgerald knew what was going on, how did the other assistants not know what was going on? And how did they not just, you know, why is Fitzgerald the only one responsible? I know he was the head coach and he is the ultimate curator of the program, But my question is no one else knew this? And if this has been the legacy thing that has happened for a long time, then how did it not stop, right? How did it not stop? I mean, my first year in the National Football League was 1984. 84, it's a long, long time ago. And I can remember my first team meeting with training camp at Rockland College right outside of Sacramento. And I'm a young scouting assistant, basically Bill Walsh's driver. And Walsh went through a whole dissertation that day on there'll be no hazing whatsoever on this team. There'll be no unfair treatment of the rookie. I mean, he was adamant about it. I mean, adamant. He wanted none of that. He didn't want any of that. It was professional football. He wanted everybody to be treated as a professional. And when this is when we had 120 people in training camp. I mean, we had unlimited right. amount of people. And so, to me, I can't get my hands around if one guy knew, everybody knew. I was sitting with Leon Hess, the former owner of the Jets, and Art Modell at the owners' meetings in Orlando, and Modell told me to keep something quiet, and Mr. Hess put up one finger and said, you know, when one person knows it, and then he put up his other index finger, then 11 people know it. Like, so you can't keep a secret is what he was saying. And that's true. And so I don't get that. I don't understand it. To me, how did the college newspaper learn more about the hazing than the committee than the consulting firm that was hired to find out?
Yeah. And this apparently stems from farther beyond just football as well. Other programs at Northwestern coming forward with other different hazing things that have gone on the campus. So I'm not sure how this is all going to play out, at least from the coaching standpoint at this point. Their interim coach, defensive coordinator David Braun, is new to the program. So at least hoping that him not being of that former regime can help turn things in the right direction under his tutelage, at least for now. But still a long way to go with everything there. I just couldn't get out of my head that I felt like if something like this happened at a program that was not a big Power 5 type of a program, and granted, it's a hard place to win at Northwestern. They're not the same as Ohio State and Michigan in this standpoint, but still a Big Ten program nonetheless. And I wonder if this was happening elsewhere, how it would be handled.
I think with the economics, I think you're right, Stormy. The economics of this make it burr. But it's also unfair to the kids that signed scholarships to go to Northwestern and want to play football that had nothing to do with the hazing to then lose their ability to have a program.
I agree.
So it's kind of a little bit unfair to just say we're going to cancel all the football operations. I mean, Willie Simmons suspended. He didn't cancel. He suspended. He basically said, we're not tolerating this, and I'm going to get to the bottom of it. So I do think, you know, there's got to be some counterbalance here as opposed to it all just can't be one way or the other.
Yeah, and again, to what we were talking about just in general with, like, rookie hazing type of stuff, like, there's a fine line from the fun and the haircuts and whatever that some guys do to actual hazing and cruelty and the things that have been done and are at least being allegedly done. So it's unfortunate. You hate to see it, and you just hope that we become better on all of these campuses.
Yeah.
These last couple of minutes here, Michael, let's go back to some of our running back in the divisions conversation to recap if anybody missed the last segment. We looked first at the NFC North, where Justin Fields is favored in that area. Felt that Fields and Madison were good selections potentially there to lead the NFC North in rushing. In the AFC North, Nick Chubb, huge odds on -250 favorite. But if you look a bit farther down the odds board, Najee Harris and J.K. Dobbins, good options. AFC South, Derrick Henry and Jonathan Taylor atop that odds board. But our guy Michael said Damian Pierce, maybe a little pizza money flyer on him at 14-1 to lead that division. Now let's go to the NFC West. Kenneth Walker is your favorite at +150. You got CMC right there as well, +160. Cam Akers, +475. James Conner, +550. And then it kind of falls off a ledge there in terms of running back production with those number twos. Who do you like most?
Well, I like, you know, to me, McCaffrey at +160, you're worried about, is he always going to tote the ball? Is he always going to carry it? And then I think Kenneth Walker, you think he will carry the football, right? However, that being said, you know, as he's carrying it, are they going to get Charbonnet more carries? So he's going to split carries, right? And so I don't like Akers because I don't think that the Rams will be ahead in games to run the ball enough into the third and fourth quarter. Same thing with with James Conner and the Cardinals. So if I took a flyer, it would be on Elijah Mitchell, because if he could ever stay healthy, he might be the best pure runner on the 49ers team.
Mm-hmm. No, I like that thought process. Kenneth Walker, 1,050 yards last year. Christian McCaffrey had 393 with Carolina, and then another 700-plus when he made the transition to San Francisco. But you said it. He executes a lot in the pass game as well in those short yardage passes. Who do you think leads the league in rushing yards this year? Do you have a pick?
Well, I still think it could be. I mean, I think it'll be Josh Jacobs again.
Really?
They run the ball. I mean, when you break down that rate of running game, it was really good. I mean, and they ran it against everybody. They're one of the few two-back run teams in the league. And one of the reasons they're successful is because nobody knows how to practice or play against two-back runs. It's a lost art. And so it's a little bit zigging when everybody else is zagging. And I think that the Raiders know they need to run the football. I think you have to bet on somebody from an offense that you know they're going to run the ball. Mike McDaniels at Miami even though he was hired to be the run game guy, he doesn't run it. So why would you play that? It's got to be a team like Tennessee where you know everything that's predicated on their success has to come off the run game. Same thing with the Raiders. Their success is going to come off the run game. San Francisco, you would think that would be the case, but they rotate back so much through there. I'll tell you the one that is Jonathan is the Denver Broncos. Sean Payton runs the ball more than people think.
Good food for thought there, certainly. Derrick Henry plus 650. Josh Jacobs, who you mentioned first, 16-1 to lead the league in rushing yards in 2023. We will be back with more Lombardi Line coming up after a quick break.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open up an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Got a funny tweet here, Michael, from @ifyoufollowmaddie. Stormy Bonantoni, obviously with a ticket on John Rahm. Let's go, B. Harmon. Listen.
Yeah, I mean, look.
I don't, yeah. Michael, I don't have a ticket on John Rahm, but I don't have a ticket on Brian Harmon. Who did? It's not exactly a household name unless you are like a diehard golf fan, truly.
Well, naturally, I got a text from Will Hill, who's got a buddy who's got a ticket
of
on
course.
John Rahm. So, of course, you know, the spanning the globe that Will Hill can do is beyond remarkable. So, yeah, he's got a buddy. And so, you know, we'll see. I mean, look, Rahm is everybody's at 6 under. Well, Stronka is at
7 under.
Yep. But, you know, I mean, he played 9 holes. Harmon's played 9 holes at even par, which is all he's got to do on the second 9 is to play even par, because nobody's going to get to 12. If he could stay at 12, he's going to win this thing. I mean, it's middle of the green. Make sure you don't get yourself in any trouble. You got 9 holes to play. You got a 5-stroke lead to play with. So, you know, again, I don't want to jinx him, but I think that to me, that's got to be the strategy, right?
Yep.
The strategy is, how do I win this? And I win this by not making a mistake.
Yeah, in about 15 minutes, we'll get a little behind the counter update on the Open Championship and more when Thomas Gable, director of the race in Sportsbook at the Borgata, joins us. Same thing at the end of the hour with Dave Ross. See what tickets he might be sweating out today, those top 10s, top 20s, and the like. I had one more follow-up question to our conversation in the last block, though, about the NFL's rushing leader, specifically because you said you like Josh Jacobs to repeat this year and do it again. We talked a lot this offseason about Deebo Samuel's comments when he felt like the contract negotiations and everything that he went through last year really did have an impact on his on-field production. He called the season last year awful, doesn't want to put anything like that on tape again. for Josh Jacobs, who has obviously been dealing with a lot, trying to secure that long-term contract. He doesn't get it. He's back on the franchise tag. This is now 2 years in a row where he's been trying to like prove his worth. Do you think he's really going to be able to live up to those expectations again and lead the league in rushing yards and not let these distractions hamper his performance?
One thing I know about Josh Jacobs is he loves football. I mean, the guy loves football. He's not playing football because he makes the money. He's playing football because he loves it. He loves the competition. I mean, there was a lot of opportunity for him last year to sit on the sidelines, you know, with the hand injury, the shoulder. And he just, you know, how many times was he on the injury report with a doubtful or questionable? But he showed up to play. Mm-hmm. And I think, to me, he knows that he's going to earn next year beyond this year based on his ability to play well. Look, when you know, for whatever the – I think the Athletic reported that they weren't close. We had Jordan Schultz on yesterday, and Jordan Schultz said that they were close, which makes more sense to me because Josh Jacobs was in the parking lot with Max Crosby waiting to get the okay to go sign his deal. Now, he knows what he turned down. He knows what he turned down, and the agent knows what they turned down. So for him to get a better deal than what he turned down requires him to play at a high level. And I think that's the kind of kid he is.
Yeah, 1,653 yards last year to lead the league, 12 touchdowns. The last repeat rushing yards leader, Derrick Henry, in 2019 and 2020. If you want to join the conversation, please tweet at us, at VSiN Live, at M Lombardi NFL, at Storm Bonantoni on Twitter. Time now to take a page out of the GM shuffle playbook here, Michael. Talk a little blue chip, red chip. I know this past week you guys talked about the NFL corners, and I want to dive into that a little bit here as well. First off, though, you've been doing this series for years, I know, but for any of our new listeners, perhaps, like, what's your criteria? What determines the difference between a blue chip and a red chip guy in your mind?
Well, the red chips are the top 10 players at their position. The blue chips are the top five. So there's a separation, right? So blue chips are guys that are elite. They're graded a 67 or above in a grading system. You know, they're players that really have no weaknesses in their game. And they show up week in and week out, and they can play the best receiver. They make plays on the football, and they consistently contribute at a high level winning performance. The red chips are just slightly below that, you know, where they may not be as consistent. They may not be as productive, but they're still really a good player. So that's kind of how you break it down. And what I try to do is, you know, a lot of these guys at the corner position particularly get hurt quite a bit. You'd be surprised they miss games. I mean, Sauce Gardner didn't miss any games last year, but they do. You know, Jalen Ramsey, we didn't think he had a good year last year, but when you look at his numbers and, you know, when people catch a pass on Ramsey, it's almost a shock. And so it lends itself to the myth that he's not having a good season.
So those are two of your top five in the blue chip category: Jalen Ramsey, Ahmad Sauce Gardner, Pat Surtain of the Denver Broncos, Denzel Ward with the Browns, and Jaire Alexander with the Green Bay Packers. Who would you say is the top corner in the NFL right now?
Well, I think Surtain certainly could almost claim that. Jaire Alexander has the ability to make so many plays on the football that I really like him. Ward is really a good player. Hasn't played 17 games consistently. Ramsey has the most talent, I think, of anybody. And when he's on, and I think he'll be on with Vic Fangio, I think he's the best corner, and I think he'll be the best corner again next year.
With Sauce Gardner, I mean, that's pretty high praise to come off of your rookie season and already be considered a blue chip corner in the National Football League. Was that an easy decision for you to put him on this list, given what you've seen?
Yeah, I think he makes it hard for the offense to throw the ball in his area. They're a zone team. What people don't understand about the Jets or Seattle when Pete Carroll was running the scheme is it's a zone concept that is built on route distribution, and it's built on keeping your eye on the quarterback, looking at his throwing shoulder, his forward shoulder, and breaking on the ball. Now, you're going to play some man because zone does become man at times. And I think Gardner did a really good job of adapting his game to the scheme. He's hard to throw the ball over because he's so long. He can run vertically down the field, and he'll tackle. So, and DJ Reed playing on the other side played well, too. And look, the enhancement of the rush helps these guys, too. I think there's no question about that. You know, when you have a really good, like, I think Denzel Ward will play really good this year for Schwartz, Jim Schwartz, the defensive coordinator, because the rush in Cleveland is going to be even better than it was last season.
To go back to Sauce Gardner real quick and having the incredible rookie campaign, there were a number of really highly touted corners that came out in this year's draft. Devin Witherspoon, Christian Gonzalez, do you think one of those guys could work their way into being a blue chip guy there next year?
Yeah, I like, I think part of this is part of the series that we have to enhance too is the best of the best. Like, who is the best of the best, and what rookie or what second year player could become the best of the best? And I think this year's rookie class was interesting. I think Witherspoon is a really good corner, right? I think he has a chance to be a really good corner. I think Banks, who the Giants drafted in the 20s, can be a really good corner, especially the way the Giants like to pressure the quarterback. And Gonzalez, Christian Gonzalez at the Patriots, he gives them some length. He gives them some ability to really lock on a receiver. A lot of people were critical of Gonzalez is because he wasn't as physical as they hoped he would be. But I think he will be, and I think he's got unique athletic skills. I think he went later than he probably should. I would say the best rookie might be Gonzalez.
Love that, getting a feel for the next class that's coming up. Also, another big takeaway I had going through your blue chip and red chip guys, red chip, J.C. Horn, A.J. Terrell, Marshawn Lattimore, Marlon Humphrey, Charvarius Ward, honorable mention, even in the red chip and honorable mention, no Darius Slay, Michael. Why is that?
Yeah. Well, I think Slay was benefited by 60 sacks coming from the defensive line. I didn't have Bradbury in there, and I went back and I watched it again. I went back and watched the Super Bowl again, and I just don't think Slay's at the same level. Look, they cut Slay this year, right? And they re-brought him back on a redo contract. So I think Slay's a good player. I think he is a good player. Do I think he's a top 10 corner in the league? I'm going to say no, really, because I think the rush really helps both Bradbury, who got cut from the Giants, and they play more zone in Philly than most people think. Now, that Super Bowl is hard to be critical of because Slay's trying to cover a receiver, and he breaks on an in route, and Slay slips on the ground like it's an ice hockey rink. So, you know, when you watch that Super Bowl again, Stormy, you really come away thinking you're not sure if the best team won. The team that won stayed on their feet the most, right? Mm-hmm. And the punt return helped and all those things. But it was really that field. If I'm an Eagle fan, that field's going to irritate me for a long time.
And this is just a little teaser for those of you at home. Make sure you check out the GM Shuffle podcast with Michael and our guy Femi Abebefe. They break down all the corners. They're also going to go through every single major position group leading up to week one of the NFL season. And when you hit the top of the mountain, that's going to be the quarterback. So get the breakdown of who's the blue chip and red chip QBs as we get set for the 2023 NFL season. We are going to take a quick timeout, Michael. When we return, Thomas Gable, director of the race and sportsbook at the Borgata, joins us live.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get the daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page where you can sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard as well where you can view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand at any given time. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You can sign up now for just $19 at VSiN.com/subscribe. We're rolling along here on a Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bond, and Tony with you. We now bring in great friend of the show, Thomas Gable, director of the race and sportsbook at the Borgata, as we do every Sunday. And Thomas, people on Twitter are coming for me. They think I'm jinxing Brian Harmon, Michael Lombardi included, because I keep saying that nobody with a 5-stroke or better lead going into the final round has ever lost. Harmon is holding on right now, still sitting at 12 under through that front nine. But I'm not crazy to say, TG, like, how many tickets did you have on a guy like Brian Harmon? It's not like he's won anything in recent history.
There were a few tickets written on him pre-flop, but he was 125-1 before the tournament. So, I mean, it doesn't take much to get some liability on somebody. You know, if you write a couple, $100 tickets, at 125-1, you know, it's a nice little return there. So, I mean, in play currently, minus 1,500. He seems to be pretty steady at this point. Yeah. He had the two early bogeys, much like he did yesterday. Came back, birdie two holes. I think the key really was, I think it was hole number three, when he got up and down from pretty deep stuff there, greenside, and was able to save par. He did make it to bogey on the par five after that, but then came back with the back-to-back birdie. So the bottom line is, when you have a five-shot lead going into the final round, the good news is you don't have to shoot 200 or 300 par most of the time. You can hang right around par and make somebody come and get you, and looks like nobody is going to come and get him today. He's just – all he has to do is play steady golf at this point. Hit fairways, hit greens, and walk away with par on every hole, and he should win going away at this point. It's just he's looks pretty steady out there.
Yeah, he's got a tough putt. He's got about a 4-foot par putt coming up here now to save par at 10. But I mean, I agree. I mean, it's kind of like, I know the weather's a nuisance and you could lose a slip here and a slip there, but he seems to be more mentally tough for a guy that's never won before. Don't you feel that way, TG?
Yeah, I mean, the nerves don't seem to be getting to him. The weather, I really don't think, is too much of an issue because there's really no wind to speak of. The rain, as you call it, it's a nuisance. That's all it is. The rain doesn't affect these guys. You play in rain quite a bit through your career, and so the rain itself isn't going to really do anything unless you find yourself in one of these pot bunkers and, with the wet sand. That's really the only thing that the wetness is going to contribute to. So at this point, it's just, every hole that goes by, Armin's one step closer to lifting the jug there. And because bottom line is, guys are going to run out of holes here, and nobody's really making any sort of move that's meaningful to put any pressure on him.
As our boy Femi tweeted a few minutes ago, he's looking unflappable. But looking at
Twitter, Femi, I love Twitter Femi. Twitter Femi's the best. I love when he comes out. He's in hiding, and then he comes out. Twitter Femi's the best. Although yesterday, Twitter Femi was predicting that Cam Young would be the leader in the clubhouse.
Oh.
Just so we know that. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You remember that, TG? He was all over it. But I love when Twitter Femi's out. It's the best.
Well, hey, but so Cameron Young sitting there at 5-under, what an open championship this would be. So competitive. If Brian Harman wasn't sitting here with a 5-stroke lead right now, because you have somebody at 7-under, you've got, 6 or 7 players right now at 6-under, Cam's at 5-under, another slew of guys at 4-under, like very closely contested, if not for Harman's lead right now.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's playing for the second place check at this point, and there's a big difference in money there that people are playing for, so.
I just saw Ricky Fowler tap in for even par for the tournament. Did you get a lot of action on Ricky Fowler because of the way he's played in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, we did. Fowler was definitely a popular play before the tournament began, and you saw his odds drop a little bit there coming in. But he'd certainly got a decent amount of play before the tournament started.
Here with Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, kind enough to join us here on a Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line. I know yesterday you guys started to talk a little bit about some NFC North win totals, talked about the challenge, I guess, of betting the Bengals over because that number is so high, what Jim Schwartz could potentially do with the Cleveland Browns, two teams you didn't get a chance to cover, the Ravens and the Steelers. How is this division really being bet when it comes to win totals? Are people believing that the Ravens are going to be able to take that step? Lamar Jackson's going to stay healthy. The passing game is going to be in full effect. Are people buying in on that and betting their win total over?
Yes, they are. So it's interesting. We opened their win total at 10. We bumped them up to 10.5. Same with the Browns. We moved them from 9 to 9.5. Steelers are still sitting at 8.5 where we opened them. But Baltimore, coming into this season with a paid Lamar Jackson and the new OC there, wide receiver additions of Odell Beckham, Nelson Aguilar, first-round pick Zay Flowers, and you look at their schedule, I think they have a pretty good shot to get the 10 wins. They'll be dogs to Cincinnati and the Niners on the road. But if Lamar can stay healthy and return to form, I think this is going to be a very tough team to beat in the division. We know defensively they're very good, but we saw some good action on the over 10 early, moved it to 10.5, getting a little bit of money now coming in on the under of 10.5. But so if you could have grabbed the 10, I think that was really where it is. But this team, I think, it certainly can challenge for the division here if Lamar is back to, you know, the Lamar that we have seen in the past.
TG, why does Mike Tomlin and his Pittsburgh Steelers continue to get no love from the betting public? I mean, Dan Campbell in the North has got the most money. The Lions have the most money, the most liability. Everything goes. I mean, everybody loves Dan Campbell. Poor Mike Tomlin. He won 8-9 games last year with a team that had no business winning 9 games.
Well, you know, their win total this year is 8.5. And if you're looking to take the under of 8.5 wins, then you're banking on something happening that has never happened before, and that's Mike Tomlin having a losing season. So, you know, they do have a somewhat easy schedule this year overall. They have an early bye week, though, in week 6, and this is an offense I just can't get behind it. They averaged less than 5 yards per play last season. Now, Kenny Pickett did have a winning record of 7-5 in his 12 starts. I just never see him developing into a top-tier NFL quarterback. I think he's going to be serviceable, and using him as a game manager, if he's able to protect the ball, maybe Pittsburgh can stay around the 500 record. But at least here, you know, the vast majority of tickets are on the over of 8.5. We are juiced to the over of 8.5 wins. So bettors here at least are optimistic. Now, Michael, as you know, there are some Pittsburgh fans in this region. So we typically, you know, Steelers are kind of one of those teams that we seem to take some money on. But they are betting the over here, at least of the 8.5.
Yeah, I think just that Mike Tomlin history of not having a losing season, that's why you see the juice so much on that over. And people just think, oh, it's not going to happen. To your point, though, about their schedule being relatively easy, you know, not the hardest in the world. It'll be interesting to see how they get out the gates, though, because starting off with the San Francisco 49ers week 1, then you have 2 primetime games weeks 2 and 3 against the Browns on Monday night and at the Raiders on Sunday Night Football. I'm curious to see how those first 3 weeks start off and how they get out the gate. Are you seeing any play for that week 1 game yet at the Borgata?
Yeah, so for week 1, Stormy, that game is probably going to be a more difficult one here for the Steelers. Mm-hmm. So against San Francisco, they're certainly it's going to be a rough go. And even that second game there against Cleveland as well. But for week 1, most of the money here is on the Niners, at least laying the 2.5 there on the road if you're taking the Niners. But you know, again, I think just because of where we sit geographically, we typically do attract some Pittsburgh money, some Steelers money. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get some Steelers money, and that becomes a little bit more balanced out as we get closer to September 10th. But to your point, though, about their schedule, you know, 2 tough games to start off. Then they go to Vegas and Houston, which is a little bit of a break there. And then a tough division game against Baltimore before the bye week.
TG, you're awesome. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, TG. We appreciate
All right,
you.
Thank you.
That's Thomas Gable at Borgata Sports on Twitter, director of the Race and Sportsbook out there at the Borgata in Atlantic City. And hey, remember, the Pittsburgh Steelers did have that big upset week 1 a year ago against the Cincinnati Bengals. No one saw that coming.
With no offense, right? I mean, they barely could move the ball. Mitchell Trubisky. Look, don't count them out. They're good at openers. I think you got to really pay close attention to coaches who have tough training camps. Andy Reid, Mike Tomlin. Openers are good for them because their team's ready to play.
Yeah, and they got that week 3 game Sunday night against the Raiders. We have some news on Vegas's quarterback as well as Dave Ross when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas? Remember, you can also convert those BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points. You can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties, whether you're here on the Las Vegas Strip or nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions do apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification, eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonn and Tony with you. Excited to welcome in live to our studio here at Circa Resort and Casino, the one and only Dave Ross, host of The Handle, which is coming up right after our program ends today. So because 3 hours wasn't enough for you, you wanted to come in a little early.
Well, yeah, you know, whenever I can talk to you and Michael about golf, like my eyes light up, because Michael and I would have these conversations for years about the British Open and like Ricky and Rory and all the usual suspects. And Michael and Stormy, we look up, it's a different lefty from America that's going to win this thing, Brian Harman. Yeah. You hate to say it's over, but it's over. It's over.
Well, I mean, it's seven holes. Stormy's going to keep sticking that pin in that voodoo doll she's got over there in Harman.
Oh.
But, I mean, she's going to keep, you know, a poor guy. Every time he twitches, it's coming from a Las
Michael,
Vegas.
Michael, mean, I'm just trying to let the people know historic facts. That's all I've been doing. Because, I don't know if you know this, I'm going to say this for the 20th time on the program today. In the he is the 10th golfer that has had a 5-stroke or better lead going into the final round. The previous 9 have all won it.
Right.
So, Brian's going to win it. That's not a jinx. I'm just saying.
No, let me ask you this. I agree, Stormy. You're just doing your job.
Thank
I get
you.
It. But Dave, why would he take a driver out? He's got seven holes. He's got a 5-shot lead. Like, why wouldn't he just continue to play it straight down the middle of the fairway?
It's a great question, because the only thing I can think of, and you hate to think of negative connotations at the Open, it would be Vandeveld. You go back to John Vandeveld, who could have done the same thing Michael's talking about on the 18th tee with a 3-shot lead, and he hits driver, puts it into the burn, and the rest is history. Ends up blowing triple bogeys 18. The only thing that gets Brian Harman in trouble here is really 18, getting to that 18th hole, because there is trouble on the right. And we saw it with guys like Tyrrell Hatton in round 2, where they hit 2 balls OB. So pulling out that driver in 18, I mean, Michael, if you're a caddy, you tackle him and you say, just it's the only club in the bag that can make you lose this tournament down the stretch is going to be the driver.
If I'm the caddy, I might break it in half. I might just just slip it, you know, there's no way you could use the club's broken or it's loose. We got to get a screwdriver or something. Dave, let me ask you this question. We all love watching golf, Stormy included. And now that the Opens ends, it's the end of the majors. Like, golf to me has lost its August appeal.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way?
Well, it's a great 4 months. I actually like that they switched it up and made the Open the last of the 4 majors now. So we get that 4 months in a row with a major in each month. But to Michael's point, now we end and it's July and you're like, well, now what? Right. And you got to wait 8 months for Augusta National to come around again in April. But I will say, Michael, I think this year, because, you know, we get it every other year, the Ryder Cup, I think we'll get jacked up again for the Ryder Cup because, you know, I saw somebody tweet, it's like an American leading this tournament and then the whole European Ryder Cup team is chasing it, right?
Yep,
so that's the feel. So I guess we'll get that. We'll give us our golf fix. But because you're right, I just felt like, Michael, in August, it would get lost. The PGA Championship got lost in the NFL, college football, because now we're so football dominant in the United States, the PGA Championship just got lost here. So I like ending it over there, wherever it's going to be, whether it's Scotland or England every year at the Open Championship.
Where everything sits right now, Brian Harman is 12 under, even par for the day, 5-stroke lead. Sepp Straka sitting there at 7 under, and now everybody's just kind of fighting for second place at this point.
Yeah.
And there is a significant difference, $700,000 difference from the second and third place finisher here. Fun fact, Michael, third place in
these are good. Here's your voodoo dolls coming
No. Third place in the Open Championship, making roughly as much as Aaron Rodgers will this year. Just going back to what you said earlier when we started the show.
Wow.
Yeah, but the Aaron Rodgers got $58 million guaranteed in 2024.
Yeah, I was gonna say, he'll have the $107 million coming up in his back pocket. He'll be fine. Exactly. He'll make it through.
Yeah.
Might be some booty calls on Aaron Rodgers this year in New York, too, for everybody in the AFC.
Yeah.
I look at this thing now. What? It's Harmon here is minus $12 to get this thing closed. Look, it would be, barring what Michael said, it would take something catastrophic on 18, a driver that he pulls twice in order to go OB to lose this thing.
He just hit driver on this last, on the 12th hole, and he hit it straight down the middle. But, like, if I'm the caddy, like, I'm a little nervous here. Now, maybe the weather forces you, because every time I turn around, a guy's got 220 yards or 205 yards to the pin. So maybe it's because the soft conditions, you're not getting enough roll.
And that could be it. And I'll tell you what I love about this one. It's my favorite of the four majors. It's because the RNA does such a great job of, again, it's normally in Scotland or England. They did have the offshoot in Ireland in 2019. But normally these courses we kind of know now. They played here 9 years ago. You play them like once in a decade, it feels like. And they don't like tiger-proof these courses, make them super long, to Michael's point. So these guys are out there. It's still kind of the same course. Yeah, they blew up 17. It's different now as a par three. But you pretty much don't trick these golf courses up. It's the truest test of golf. And at one point, we're going to look back on this. This is now Brian Harmon live, and the screen goes to
minus 2,000
to close it. We're going to look back and say he was just the best golfer for 4 days. And 2 days were very different from the first 2 days. So it's not like he played the same golf course all 4 days. You got to tip your cap at some point to Brian Harmon for what he's historically about to do.
Looking to secure his first major championship title and his first win, period, on the PGA Tour since 2017. Brian Harmon is, again, currently sitting 12 under. I want to wrap up the show today, these last couple minutes, going back to a little NFL here, because we did get some news in the last hour, Michael, that what you have been saying all along would happen has happened with Jimmy Garoppolo. He passes the physical and will be there for training camp.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it. What's going to happen now? The contract. Oh, my gosh. I'm surprised. I mean, oh, God. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. That happened. What, all that talk about the contract, the restructure, this is dangerous. You know, look, they had a plan. They put their plan in place. Garoppolo fulfilled the plan, and now he's got an opportunity. The thing they don't want to do with Tyree Wilson and with Garoppolo is rush him back. Like, the season's a marathon, right? And so you don't want Tyree Wilson, who's coming off of a foot fracture, to get pressed up against a guy, you know, a 300-pound lineman, and all of a sudden pull a calf muscle or pull a hamstring, right? So you got to be really careful. And sometimes taking your time is the right approach.
I'm stunned that the number, now that we know that Jimmy G is good, and the foot's going to be okay. And to Michael's point, we'll figure out if he's ready week one. If not, early, you know, it was 12-1. Now it's 14-1. That tells you what the betting market thinks of Jimmy G being back in there as
a
starter.
You have a 12-1 ticket, don't you?
I have a 12-1. This was before the draft, because I didn't know, Michael, what they were going to do at quarterback. And we didn't know about Jimmy G at the time, who it was going to be. And I really thought at 7, they would be in play for a Richardson, or, you know, maybe trade up to try to get one of the big quarterbacks in said draft. And then, not to say he gets stuck with Jimmy G, because, you know, Stormy, I don't hate Jimmy G as a starting quarterback. I think he's a decent quality NFL starter. But is it good enough to win the division? No. And then you see the odds go from 12-1 to 14-1 after the news of Jimmy G be there. I just look at the defense, to Michael's point, with Wilson. That's who they end up getting. Good pick there. But is the defense good enough? I don't know. Josh Jacobs, is he going to play? Is he going to hold out? They've got so many other issues besides Jimmy G's foot that I don't see a pathway for 14-1 or my 12-1
ticket. Well, the defense can't be any worse. So I think that they take steps,
right,
for
that's
sure.
True.
Win total, only 6.5. Like, there's reasons in my mind to believe that they could take steps forward, not back, this year. At least that's just my personal opinion. I'm not betting them to win the division. I think that it's still the Chiefs' division when push comes to shove.
Mm-hmm.
Last 90 seconds here, though. I know you have that in pocket.
Yeah.
What's your favorite NFL future that you have right now?
This is going to shock Michael. Cowboys over 9.5 wins.
I should have prefaced that with non-Cowboys future.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you and Femi, Twitter Femi, where is he?
Okay, my favorite non-Cowboys one,
yes,
I'll give you the Packers over 7.5.
Okay.
I really like the rest of the roster. I don't know enough about Jordan Love yet, but I do think that the rest of the 52 is good enough. It's not as good as the Eagles 52 before we found out about Jalen Hurts. But if Jordan Love can just be a guy that you can trust at the starting quarterback position, the division to me is not that good. I think the Vikings are coming back to the pack. I think this is an 8-9 win football team.
And I know, Michael,
I agree. The only – my hesitation is Matt LaFleur. I just worry about him. Yeah. I worry – I agree with you, and I recommend this to everybody. I think they'll win the North. I really do. However, to me, if they don't, I'm going to sit there and say, why did you trust LaFleur? Because I don't know if he'll adjust.
I got a 5-1 ticket on them to win the division as well. But I'm with Michael. I do like the makeup of the football team.
We
got to
see who LaFleur is without Aaron Rodgers under center. Now, this was like – the Costco sample of what's to come the next 3 hours on the handle with Dave Ross. You're going to get the full thing. Take it home. Get the price. You're going to go right into the handle next.
A lot of cowboy talk coming. Thanks, you guys.
Maybe.
Thank you, Dave.
Just kidding. From a 49ers fan, what can I say?